It's time for episode 550 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes.
Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast that just had its gears oiled. I am one of your hosts, ticking along. I'm Micah Sargent, and I am joined across the internet by my good pal, the one, the only, Dan Morin. How you doing, Dan?
Oil.
I'm doing my best, Tin Man.
I was a little worried there. I thought we lost
my
you.
Oil can.
I get it. Well, while Dan figures out that impression, let's move along to welcome our wonderful guests to my left, the senior developer advocate at GitHub. It's Christina Warren. Hi there, Christina.
Hello. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you.
And to my left, the host of AI Inside and Android Faithful, Jason Howell's back. Welcome back, Jason.
What's up? Good to be here. I love this show. It's always fun.
All right, so you all know how this works. There are four topics in just 30 minutes, and mine is the one with which we will start. I have a question for you that starts with a command. Share some early web nostalgia. What is one of the first delightful things you remember doing on the World Wide Web? And again, let it be the delightful things, not necessarily the, trying to get connected in the first place. Christina, we'll start with you.
Okay, so I'm gonna use the web. I'm not gonna use Usenet. Although as a fourth grader, I did have fun convincing people on the alt.tv.morrowsplace Usenet that I was an adult with my fan theories, many of which turned out to be true. But I think it was web rings. Web rings are like the first nostalgia thing that I guess kind of comes to mind, where you basically would kind of have these kind of affinity groups of sites together, and you would all kind of join a web ring, and you would press a button and go to a random site in said web ring. And it was kind of like a blogger like sidebar, but you know, nostalgier, like more GeoCities-esque.
Web rings. There's a name I haven't heard in a long time. The days where you just be like, take me to a random site on the internet, and that did not go disastrously for
right.
you.
Right. I mean, sometimes it did,
still
to
could.
Be clear.
Still could, but the odds were better. Yeah, I was thinking about that as I was thinking about my experience, which was when I was early teenager. My friend and I, who were both aspiring writers, published an electronic magazine of science fiction and fantasy on the web, and we had our own website. And my favorite delightful thing about that was a couple things. One of my friends designed this really awesome 3D globe. It was like in this, you know, terrible animated GIF of a spinning 3D globe and the name of our magazine spinning around it, you know, like the Universal logo. And it was just, it's mind-blowing to, you know, 13-year-old me, like, oh my God, this is so cool. We're immediately one of the most amazing sites on the internet. And then, I don't know if you remember this, I'm sure Christina will. Do you remember, like, there was, like, a thing, it was, like, the best of the web, or, like, top 1,000?
Yes!
Yeah, like, we got one of those, like, stupid, like
the worst.
It's like, did it mean anything? I have no idea to this day, but I remember being so psyched about it at the time. Like, we are objectively now one of the best sites on the internet. It was a really terrible website I designed for myself. But it was so much fun. The early days of web design were so much fun.
They're the best.
I know. Everything was so cheesy and so terrible, but at the same time, just so pure. Those are my high points. Jason, what about you?
Well, I know that, Christina, you said no, you weren't going to start with Usenet, but that has to be what I go with. I was using the Usenet newsgroups when I was right out of high school and in college at Idaho State University. And I remember connecting to Usenet through the school kind of computer area and just kind of realizing, like, oh my God, people are talking about everything, going into movie news groups. And I had just worked for a number of years in a movie theater. So I had this huge collection of movie theater posters and 35 millimeter trailer prints. So I started to realize,
so cool.
Wait a minute, I can go into here and I can post a list of all these things and I can sell them to people online. So I had this whole thing going.
So you went on eBay.
I didn't know about eBay. I don't even know eBay existed.
So eBay didn't exist then. You invented eBay.
Yeah, you made it.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh,
that's
man.
Me. I also traded bootleg cassettes. That was a whole other can of worms. That was awesome. He's pretty awesome, though.
The grandfather of LimeWire right here on this podcast.
That's right.
So there are a couple of things here for me. My mom did not have a lot of money. It was my grandparents who had a little bit more disposable income. They lived out, as we call it, in the country. And so dial-up was a part of our lives for a long time more, you know, even after faster internet options became available. So a lot of my early web experience was with dial-up, waiting for things to load. And so you needed, if you're going to have a delightful time online, you needed sites that were made for that time. And the reason why this topic came up is because over on The Guardian, there was a piece published recently about Neopets. And
Yes,
Neopets was one of my early loves on the web because it was so much fun. And basically, it was just going from one page to another page for all of the interactions. And so it didn't feel like it was taking so terribly long. And you would approach an omelet and try to grab a slice of the omelet. And it either went well or didn't. And you could feed your pets. And it was great. And so that had me nostalgic. And it's good to hear all of your stories as well. Thank you for your answers on that topic. Let's go to our next one, which comes from Christina.
Okay, so there's been a lot of talk over the last week about good gadgets and bad gadgets and the roles of tech reviewers, and we're not going to get into that discourse. I just want to know from all of you, what was your worst or most disappointing tech product that you've ever owned or reviewed?
The thing that popped into my mind as the most annoying thing I've owned was actually a Wemo smart outlet. I found this thing maddening. For some reason, it didn't want to work with any, it had its app and everything, but, it wouldn't work. I couldn't update the firmware. Resetting it, was this huge ordeal of, creating a Wi-Fi network and then getting on its Wi-Fi network and then telling it to use the other Wi-Fi network. And it was but I don't want to use that Wi-Fi network. I got my own Wi-Fi network. I ended up battling with these things all the time. And it's this is a dirt simple job. I send you a signal, you turn on the outlet. I send you a signal, you turn off the outlet. That's it. That's your job. But I never have found, and I've used dozens of these things, but for whatever reason, I had this Belkin Wemo line for a while there that was just the worst of that. I'll also throw in a piece of software I reviewed at Macworld years and years ago, where I was very excited because it was supposed to be a software that was intended to, if you were doing a novel or something, it was to keep track of your characters. I've forgotten the name of it, but it was, this was 15 years ago or more. I downloaded it and I just was it was a baffling, almost non-functional piece of software where I would put stuff in and it would just, it was like somebody just made a form. And I was anybody could do this. Why is this software like charging whatever amount of money it was charging for this? That was a thing. It's you could do this in a spreadsheet and it would have no difference in functionality. And I remember being very, very upset about it and going to my editor and being I'm going to give this the lowest review I've ever given anything. And they're really? I was yes, because it's that bad. So that one, maybe I did kill it. Maybe I put it out of business. I don't know. Or maybe it's still floating around out there. Who can say? Jason?
The one that came to mind for me, the Nexus Q, the Google Nexus Q, which was one of Google's earliest kind of real hardware plays. They had a couple of devices that year that they showed off at Google I.O. But the Nexus Q was this orbular device with a spinning top half with this cool LED design. The design was absolutely beautiful. It was shocking how well they designed the look of this device, and it felt really nice and everything. But it was basically, it was a streaming stick in the form of a circle that's locked to YouTube and Google Play Music. And it cost $299 at a time when other streaming sticks ran $39, $49, and they could do everything, right? They weren't locked down to two different services. Beyond that, it also had a full-blown audio receiver with speaker plugs in the back of it. It was just really a puzzling device. It got totally destroyed by reviewers, myself included. Google, after 3 months, ended up removing any mention of it from its store. They refunded anyone who purchased it all of their money, and they got to keep the paperweight after that. So, yeah, Nexus Q.
This might be a spicy take for some people, so strap in and forget my email. I am going with the second part of your question, which is most disappointing tech product mm-hmm. I've ever reviewed. It's the Apple Vision Pro. I
love it.
From the moment that I put it on, I could feel myself lying to myself about, oh, this is the way that this looks. It's so amazing. And no, there's not a little difference between what I'm actually seeing and what I'm seeing in this device. No, I went into it because of the earlier reviews of those first looks that Apple gave to certain journalists. I went into it expecting that the view that I would have would be no different or very, very, very little difference between real life and looking through the Apple Vision Pro. And so going into it expecting that, when I put it on and there was a very clear difference between the two, I was immediately disappointed. From there, my disappointment continued because of how uncomfortable the device was. I tried all the different kinds of ways to make it more comfortable, the different straps and this and that, and making sure I had the right the discomfort that I experienced paired with some really cool experiences, that's what leads to disappointment, right? Because you want mm-hmm. to be able to use this for a long time. You want to have those fun experiences, but I couldn't. I found myself avoiding as much as possible ever putting the thing on because of how much pain it caused me and how much like physical illness it was causing. So it's the biggest disappointment with a capital D that I've had with tech in a very long time. And I hope that future generations of it aren't as uncomfortable as this one is. Christina, what about you?
So I was like going through my mind. I was like, okay, I've reviewed some bad gadgets, but what is the worst? And then it came to me. Will.i.am's smartwatch, the Pulse, is still to this day one of the worst pieces of tech that I've ever used. It's hard to describe how bad this product was. The user interface on it was bizarre. The design, it was ugly. It was kind of like this weird bangle thing. I think there's either a photo or a Vine somewhere of us putting our review unit around my ankle, like an ankle bracelet, you know, like the, you know, people in jail would have or whatever, because it was that big and weird. It had like the worst, like if you think that typing in passwords and stuff like on the Apple Watch is bad, like this was really, really bad and just poorly designed, atrocious software, didn't do anything that it was promised to do. And just interestingly, of several very terrible Will.i.am tech products, like Will.i.am is not just, you know, a musician of questionable, you know,
ooh,
whatever.
Spicy. Well,
shots fired.
Look, Fergie, I'm here for always. I'm just saying, like, Fergie forever. But like his pivot away from musician to tech entrepreneur, really interesting in just how bad the products are. So yeah, the Will.i.am Pulse smartwatch, which came out almost 10 years ago, or we reviewed, I guess, like 9.5 years ago. Terrible. One of the worst things I've ever encountered.
All righty. I am realizing that it's halftime here on Clockwise, which means we're going to take a little quick break before we come back with our next topics. I do want to mention that we have some Clockwise merch. I just got my Clockwise tote. That's right. We have a new tote and it comes. Oh, I love it. It's you can get it, I think, in a couple of colors, but I've got the black tote with a gold or yellow or mustard, whatever color you want to call for the Clockwise color icon on it. And it is really striking. In fact, I think at one point it was featured on the site that we use for our merch. If you head to clockwise.social, you'll see a hat. I also have that. I'm pretty sure like I'm single-handedly funding all our stuff, but I really like the hat. I really like the shirts. They're so soft. That's the great thing about Cotton Bureau. They make really soft shirts. And there's a phone case and, of course, our tote. All of that you can find at clockwise.social. When you buy those things, we actually do get a tiny bit of money that comes to us. And as that's trickling in, it's just helping pay for the Zoom membership that we have so that we can keep doing the show. So yes, please consider picking up some Clockwise swag and let us know if you do. I'd love to see photos if that's your thing. All right. We are back from halftime and that means it's time for Dan's topic.
All right. Well, this topic is brought to you by my frustrations of the day. How much time do you spend trying to get a tech product to work or troubleshooting a product you have before you throw up your hands, give up entirely, and it makes it to the last category? Jason, we'll start with you.
I realize that I have a pretty short attention span for troubleshooting patience. I either get bored quickly, or I just become really frustrated with, you know, when I'm trying to search for that solution or figure, or I think I found the solution, and then I start to go down that road, and then I finish it, and, you know, all of the, you know, clearing the path to make that solution happen, then I get to the end point and it still doesn't work, it didn't fix the problem, and now I got to start over again. So frustrating to me, unless I'm like really invested in something. If it has something to do with something that I'm really kind of close to and really have like a deeper passion for or something like that, then I get that frustration kind of sinks in and stuff. Although I will say, I don't know that I ever entirely give up. I just end up procrastinating endlessly. That's what ends up happening.
So it depends on who it's for. Like if I'm trying to fix something that is my own issue, once I start on it, I've got a lot of patience. I can work through it. I can troubleshoot and keep going and going and going and going. I know that eventually there's a point at which I just go, okay, now I'm done. But I don't know how long that is, because I have hyper-focus on my side at times. And so I can really just get in there and just troubleshoot. But if it's for another person, it depends on the person, but there are some other aspects that come into play. There's the, I am currently performing at one of my most touted skills. And so the more that I fail at this, the more it starts to eat away at me, because I'm supposed to be the person who knows how to do this. Yes. And then there's also the frustration of the other person involved. And for some reason, my dear, sweet, lovely partner, has just a lot of tech frustration that exists in general. It's sort of like a roiling ocean of lava and flames that exists right under the surface when it comes to tech. And so trying to do two things at once, which is fix the product or whatever's broken and also keep those roiling flames from erupting, is quite the ordeal. And so I would say that it's not too long until I go, okay, I'm going to step away and we're just going to go with it's not working and I'm sorry. Bye. So yeah, that's my answer. Christina, what about you?
Yeah. So it, similar to you, it sort of depends. If it's for myself, I'm stubborn. And so sometimes it will just be I'm committed to coming up with a solution for this. Having said that, I have a very strong, ability to buy my way out of things. So I will look at a solution and be like, okay, how much would it cost for me to just buy my way out of this? And if it's under a certain amount of money and I've been working on it for over a certain amount of time, yeah, I will just buy my way out of it. Does that mean buying a new piece of software, buying a new device, like whatever the case may be? Like if, you know, I'm dealing with printer issues with my parents, you know, and wireless printing and whatnot, which is more complicated and worse now than it was a decade ago. It was actually significantly better a decade ago. I will just buy a new printer, right? Like, screw it. But if it's something that I can't buy my way out of, like I have this annoying tendency to just be committed to finding a solution and then hoping that I never have to touch it ever again. So it varies, but if I can buy my way out of it, I will. But if I can't, or if I'm just like committed to it, I unfortunately can get sucked into something for days if it really comes to it.
Yeah, that's me. I'm kind of a combination of everything. Like I have that frustration, and like the more time I spend working on something, thinking this should fix this problem, and it doesn't work.
Doesn't.
And then invariably it's the domino cascade where like everything else starts going wrong, or at least you feel like everything else starts going wrong, and you're like, oh no, this isn't working, and no, this isn't working, and like, what is going on, you know? And I nothing is worse. And from, you know, Micah's point, so much of our, you know, self-identity is tied up in being good at these things and just being like, why can't I figure this out? And so I will like totally heads down, like work on this right now. I've got a issue with the smart lock I have installed, and it's just like, it's baffling me. And I've like taken it apart multiple times and I'm trying to put it back together and it's still not working. I don't, I can fix it, Christina. I can do it. So yeah, this is perhaps my own particular neuroses. So unfortunately, it, but wish me luck as I dive back in after we record this episode to fixing it, and I will be triumphant is all I'm going to say, or I will buy a new one. All right. Thank you all for your thoughts / group therapy on that topic. Let us move on to our final topic, which comes from Jason.
Good luck, Dan. what's the oldest piece of working technology that you still own that you use either regularly or semi-regularly? This is, you know, this is an old piece of technology that still has some sort of function in your life now. And how did you acquire it?
So it used to be that I used or that I had a printer that was my oldest piece of technology because I got it in college and it just continued to work for me. And I only needed to print every now and then. But what would always happen is I would end up needing to clean the print heads. And by that, I mean, do it physically. I would have to get some 99% isopropyl alcohol and do a bunch of work. So I finally just stopped and got the printer that everyone has, the Brother black and white laser printer, and I'm happy and the world is good. So now the oldest piece of tech that I regularly use is a little device I got while I was in college. See, in college, they're very wise there, where they know that students make poor decisions. And so they have little stores where you can buy things. And when you like tech, like I do, you go and you buy things because there's a discount. It's through the student store, blah, 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 blah. And so I didn't need an Apple USB super drive, but I liked how it looked. Quite literally why I got it, because I liked how it looked and I wanted it. And so I got it. And funny enough, they still do sell the Apple USB super drive for $79. But I do occasionally use it. You know, when it's mostly my partner, I've mentioned this before, gets DVDs, you know, for reasons to have a digital copy of that DVD, then that's where the USB super drive comes into play. But it's very old at this point. Still works well. And still sits on my desk in my office. Yeah, Christina, what about you?
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and like not include retro video game consoles, some of which I've had since I was a child and will occasionally use, because I don't think that, not really in the spirit of kind of the conversation. For the same reason, I was going to say I probably have some home audio equipment, either speakers or maybe a receiver, something that I've had for 20 years at this point that I don't maybe use actively, but are still kind of in the mix. But in terms of things that I use frequently, and like you, Mike, I have a super drive somewhere, but I actually upgraded it to a Blu-ray drive that I was then, the firmware was patched with MakeMKV so that I can rip Blu-rays on my Mac with it. Fun thing for anybody else if you want to do that. But the thing I use probably most frequently that is older is actually the microphone I'm using to record this podcast. So I'm using a Rode Podcaster mic, which, yes, like the Super Drive, is USB-A. I have other mics. I have an SM7B. I have some other really nice XLR mics. I have a number of other USB mics that are more portable. But this is one that I've had since 2009, I want to say. And it's just, you know, I think even the stand that I got for it is also from 2009. It's been through, I think, four different locations, and I'm still using it. So that's, you know, like, you have something that works and it's good enough, why not? So that's me, my microphone.
I, you know what, this once upon a time would have been a very easy question for you, but I was like looking around my office like, man, I've actually swapped out a lot of stuff in the past couple of years. Like, I had an old pair of speakers I used for a super long time. Those are gone. You know, I swapped out my mic, all this stuff. So I was like, maybe these headphones? I got a nice lamp. So the ones I put on the list are, first of all, as Mike said, a printer. I'm using a Brother multifunction printer that's probably about 15 years old and is slowly breaking. Yesterday, I had to, once again, I was having some trouble with it. And so I had to get it back on the network, and I remembered that in order to get it on the Wi-Fi network, you need to manually enter the Wi-Fi password one character at a time. Also, fun fact, the display is not long enough to fit my entire Wi-Fi password. So you might wonder, how do you do that? And I also wonder that, and I'm like, I know I did this before, and it turned out it had to be like, get an Ethernet cable, plug it into my laptop, go to the web interface that I forgot existed, enter the password there to get it back on the Wi-Fi. So it's working again for the moment.
Great.
I want to replace it, but my wife was like, she's like, I'm worried about the environment. Don't replace it. It's like, okay, fair enough. We don't use it that much. And then a few years ago, it would have been, I had an Onkyo stereo receiver that was my home theater setup for many years. Like, My dad gave it to me in high school. I continued using it up through about 2 years ago when I finally, when we moved to a house and I finally like splurged on a 5-1 system. But that thing served me great. I mean, went to college, went to multiple apartments. I mean, I probably in the end used it for almost like 25 to 30 years probably. And it still works. It's in my closet in my office. Like I can pull it out and set it up and get the radio station going or hook up a phonograph. Or some wax cylinders. but yeah, it has been recently retired. So, but other than that, I think I've been very good recently about like upgrading everything. And so I look around, it's like, oh man, I've cured myself of that retail disease where I feel like, oh, I should upgrade this thing because I literally have upgraded everything. So yeah, maybe my Sony MDR headphones, which I've had for a decade. So there you go. Jason, wrap us up here.
Yay. Well, I still have a 2007 Mac Pro that I use every once in a while.
Oh, it wow.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, I got a laptop to replace it, but I still end up booting up that Mac Pro sometimes because it's got some software on there. And it's all dialed in, you know, to my music making capabilities in a very specific way. But the thing that kind of inspired this was I was looking around my room and I saw this synthesizer that I have. It's called the Oberheim Matrix 1000. It's an analog synthesizer from the late 80s. And it's just a really cool synth, especially right now. You know, there's the whole like 80s kind of like synthy, you know, synth wave stuff coming along, you know, like coming back into vogue, I guess has been for a while. But this is a really great synth for that. But I got it from a composer friend who I was working for back in like 2004 because I was selling a bunch of gear for him. And he was like, you know what? And I'll just give, you can have this. You don't need to sell it. You can have it. At the time, I think it was valued at $150. No one cared about this thing. But now, like in the current kind of market, it's like around $1,000, $1,500 in value. So it's totally shot up. So it's this thing that I got for free that I use all the time in music. It's really awesome.
Nice. All righty, folks. We are nearing the end of this episode of Clockwise, but I do have a bonus question for you. My question is, what is your least favorite song by one of your favorite artists? Christina, we'll start with you.
Okay, so Taylor Swift is my queen, but not all of them are winners. And me, the lead single off of Lover is atrocious. And I tried to convince myself 5 years ago that I liked it. And I didn't then. And I really hate it now.
The Beatles. I love the Beatles. You know what? There are some that are just too out there for me. I don't particularly care for I Am the Walrus. I think that it is a potentially overrated, a little too dissonant for me, discordant. Maybe the guys are just a little too high on their own supply in that one.
The only one that I could come up with, and I tried with the Beatles. I couldn't find anything in there. I was like, well, I like them all for different reasons. The only one I could come up with was John Lennon, Whatever Gets You Through the Night. At which, if you listen to his solo career, he has plenty of hits and a lot of misses and everything. But this is one of those tracks that when it comes up on like a standards Lennon playlist, I always think about skipping it. But it's important to note, I don't actually skip it. So there's what? That.
Isn't there some low-hanging fruit with that new Beatles song that they put out like last
year? I thought
year?
He likes that one, doesn't he?
Yeah. Really? I do.
I'm with you. I am the Walrus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
For me, it's going to be from Beyoncé's otherwise amazing discography. It's Kitty Cat. And look, there was a Glamour journalist who got absolutely lambasted for saying that that was the case, but that's a song I always skip on the list. Thank you all for your answers to that. Now, all of you listening out there, if you would like to get ad-free episodes of this show with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. Just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for just $7 per month or $70 per year, and you will help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss emulators. With that, we have reached the end of this episode of Clockwise. All that's left is to thank our wonderful guests. Christina Warren, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And Jason Howell, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure, you guys. So much fun.
And Micah, one of us will be back next week, but I'm not saying which one. So I guess one of us did die during the podcast today. Oh, well. one of us is a ghost. But until one of us returns next week, we remind you, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I don't know why I decided to go evil laugh.